The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We have a lot to get to on today's program. We'll talk here in a moment about both of the PACs going on, or one is concluded now, the Belfast PAC, and one is ongoing, the one in Tampa with my father. Regarding the one on this end of the world, we'll be talking in a moment to Edwin Trables, who serves as our campaign manager here in the UK. He's here with us in the studio today, so we'll get to him in just a moment. Later on in the show, we'll talk about the BuzzFeed fiasco from Friday that happened after our broadcast on into, I guess, our time on into Friday night. So I had a little bit of time over the weekend, over a busy weekend, to read a little bit about that, and we'll talk about that toward the end of the show. And then also we'll comment on a great column, I think from 2 or 3 days ago, by Melanie Phillips, that has a few paragraphs that almost sound like they're right out of the United States and Britain in prophecy. Pretty amazing. I think many of you know we think a lot of Melanie Phillips, her observations on issues here in the UK, and of course in Jerusalem, and with respect to Israel. So we'll look more closely at one of her recent columns just the other day. Well, as for the campaign in Tampa, I won't get into it in too much detail, but there was, I think, the only downside to it that I've heard is that there was a hiccup in the travel. My father got there just a few minutes late, I believe. But we've gotten some feedback already from one of the individuals who attended there, saying that it didn't seem like anyone was bothered by the late start. I think they started maybe 30 minutes later than they were anticipating. Andrew Locher tells me that they had 187 in attendance, including 65 who are not in the PCG or not members of God's Church. And they had a handful. He didn't quite get all of the information he would have liked, but I think there's several so far that have signed up for the follow-up Bible study. So we'll have more information, hopefully, on that tomorrow. The second night, of course, there's always fewer who attend. They're expecting, just based on previous percentages, they're expecting about 110 people tonight in Tampa, following, as I say, last night, where they saw 187 people in total. Well, as for the Belfast pack, I think you could say the focus, as far as our literature is concerned, the focus was very much on Malachi's message and Mystery of the Ages. We had 17 of our own people, our own members, who were there for both nights, or I guess Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. Seven of our members from Ireland, they all came together for the two packs in Belfast. Eight of us from Edstone went over as the staff. Brad McDonald accompanied me as the two ministers, and of course our wives, my son, and then we had three crew members that took all the gear there. And then we also had two people visiting, two of our members visiting from the Netherlands. So all totaled, we had 17 for both events. In the Saturday night meeting, I spoke on following in the steps of the end time Elijah. I mentioned how that we had just recently passed the January 16th anniversary, the 33rd anniversary of Herbert Armstrong's death. I mentioned how fast the time had gone by and that was a little more than a generation ago. And then I tied it together with the distribution of Malachi's message that happened in 1990. This would have been 4 years after Mr. Armstrong's death. I mentioned to the audience that 13 of us assembled together that Wednesday evening in January of 1990, where we packaged together 921 copies of Malachi's message, and that was the beginning, and how that those manuscripts landed in mailboxes on or around January the 16th, 1990. 1990, just 4 years after Herbert Armstrong's death. And so I mentioned that from the very start of the PCG, there was this special emphasis on January 16th, on the anniversary of Herbert Armstrong's death. And then I referred the audience to a statement or something that's written in Malachi's message where my father says, the one predominant issue for God's people in the end time revolves around a modern-day Elijah. He restored all things. And there's a reference there to Matthew 17, verses 10 and 11. And my father said, if we know God, the Bible, and where God's church is, then it's easy to find this Elijah. So that pretty much made up the first half of my lecture. The second half, I talked more about the falling away that has happened since Herbert Armstrong's death and how that too is prophesied. It was prophesied that an end-time Elijah would come on the scene and restore all things to the church. But it was also prophesied in 2 Thessalonians 2 and elsewhere that there would be a great falling away from the truth. And how that falling away in itself is a sign that points to the return of Christ. It's all prophesied, you see. So it was a pretty basic message coming out from Malachi's message for the most part. And then we had a great discussion with lots of the visitors that were there. And I think that went on for almost a couple of hours. And then following that first night, a few of us, the crew, I guess, mainly, followed that up with a discussion about some who were in attendance, how that several of them, I think, had come out from or were currently attending Laodicean branches of the Worldwide Church of God. So I guess after that discussion and then getting up on Sunday morning, I felt like I had something else that was prepared for Sunday, but I just felt like I needed to make a few adjustments. And so I turned to some of my old doctrines lecture material and some of the things I've talked about over the years on the Feast of Pentecost, and hurriedly put together some material on the purpose of the church. We just felt like that would maybe be more helpful for some of those who were attending. And so in this lecture, the second lecture, I was able to talk about Mystery of the Ages and the sixth chapter of that book. And this quote in particular, where I said, this is Mr. Armstrong writing, he said, the real truth about the church, the reason for its origin and its purpose, has remained hidden from even the professing Christian world. They just don't know. They don't know about the purpose for the church. And as I mentioned to those in attendance for that second campaign, or the second lecture of the campaign, Mr. Armstrong, he very much knew that the church, even at the end of his life, even back in the mid-1980s, when the church was really at its peak in growth and power and reach, and yet Mr. Armstrong was saying to the brethren in God's church that they really weren't getting it. They weren't understanding why we were brought into the church. I played this particular clip for the audience yesterday, this clip too, this from Pentecost of 1985. Here's Mr. Armstrong.
But why? Why the Feast of First Fruits? Why is this church the first fruits of God's harvest for His kingdom? Is God unfair? Is He discriminating against others to choose us first and they have to wait and come later? Brethren, I want to say to you, I think that most of you don't understand that at all. I think that most of you think that it merely means that God chose us to get into the kingdom first and then they'll come in later. That is not the answer at all. And I perceive that even our ministers, when they preach, take it for granted that we're just, the whole goal is to get us into the kingdom of God, and that's all we're called for now, and for no other purpose, but we'll get in ahead of the others. Then God is discriminating against the others. There is a reason why we're the first fruits. And I wish I could drive that home. But I fear that most of you just don't get it. You don't understand it at all. Why? Why are we the first fruits? I'm going to try to make it plain this afternoon, and still I think you won't get it. So much Protestantism has rubbed off on us, we can't get it out of our heads. They think God's trying to save the whole world, and then we think, well, he's just saving us first. And that is not the answer at all.
So a sobering warning there from Herbert Armstrong. We played that, I think, within the first 10 minutes of the second lecture yesterday afternoon, and then went into a very basic study of why the church, the purpose for the church. So that gives you a pretty good, I think, a synopsis of what we discussed or what we talked about, what I preached about for those two lectures. Now we'll come to some of the results. We have Edwin Trables in here, fresh off of his travel across Northern Ireland, and then you guys, when did you get in this morning?
4:25
a.m. So, and then I told them because they were driving through the night that they could come in. Instead of at 8 o'clock, they could come in at 8:15. I gave them a little bit of a break there. No, they came in just a little bit before lunch. Hopefully they're rested up. But Edwin was working together with Richard Palmer and then also Sam Livingston. They traveled down there on Friday and then back through the night last night, carrying all of the gear, a car or I guess a station wagon full of all of the banners and the literature and the sound equipment and some of the other things that you need to make it look nice. And I must say, too, the room looked, it was perfect in its size and just a really nice, elegant atmosphere for both evenings as well.
Well, that's right. We had a wonderful weekend where we arrived and some of us drove in, as you said, and some others, like yourself, flew in, and then we arrived and had a great setup time, and it just went really smoothly. So yeah, it was really a good weekend.
Maybe you could start by just explaining to our listeners the process that goes into, it's probably very similar to what they do at headquarters, maybe with a few differences here and there. But tell them a little bit about what led up to the Belfast Pack, the number of people we're talking about who received invites, and then what the process was for inviting them.
Right. We always send out one main invitation, and then we send them two reminders a little closer to the actual event. And then we send out about, we had about 200 Trumpet subscribers initially, but we did want to boost that a bit. So beyond what we usually do, which includes mentioning the pack on our usual programs like this one and our magazines, the Philadelphia Trumpet and Trumpet Brief email, we also, in addition to that, did some advertising in Ireland. We on November 11th, we ran a good-sized newspaper advertisement in the Telegraph Sunday Life, which featured the He Was Right booklet, which has Mr. Armstrong's a portrait picture on there and also a cover of the Philadelphia Trumpet magazine. And then we also ran a series of other newspaper ads in the Friday edition of the Belfast Telegraph, and that featured the United States and Britain in Prophecy and the magazine, and also He Was Right again, and then The Plain Truth About Christmas, because we were getting closer to Christmas also. So
right.
We did that as well as digital advertising.
Yeah, and we what he's explaining there is we did experiment somewhat leading up to this, because typically we just want to make sure that they've been subscribing at least for 6 months, I think it is, before we send them an invite. But we got an exception to the rule, I guess, in this particular case, because we just had so few Trumpet subscribers, as he said, just a couple of hundred. So besides the advertising we did in the Telegraph and elsewhere, I also was really trying to draw attention to becoming a subscriber with our TV program over here, in the hope that we could boost up the circulation. And it seems like we did boost that circulation there in the last couple of months before the event.
Yes, sir. That's for sure. We nearly doubled it. So there's about basically 400 subscribers now in Ireland, And we did also invite the people who receive our More Christian Living magazine, The Royal Vision, also, right, in case they receive that but not The Trumpet. Most people will receive both if they do receive The Royal Vision, but there were a few who we also were able to invite for that.
Yeah. So what that means is we did open it up to some readers that were maybe brand new or didn't know a whole lot about us. So with that in mind, then what kind of response did we get for the first night, in terms of these are people who said, yes, sign me up?
Right. So including everybody, we had 48 people that on Saturday night at for the 6 p.m. lecture, and that included 31 people who usually don't attend with the church already. So that was a great number. That was really a good follow-through rate, as we call it. A lot of people registered, and we had a lot of people show up on that Saturday. So that was really good.
It was like 63%, did you say?
63%, that's right.
So 63% that said they wanted to come actually came, and that compares to London. How?
In London, we had a 55% follow-through rate.
Okay, so the first night was really great, a pretty full room. I think we only probably had 55 or 60 seats set up, so we pretty much filled that up, and then got a pretty good response after the fact, as I said earlier, with our fellowshipping and such. And then how many people signed up for the Bible study following that first night?
After the first night, we had 9 people sign up for the Bible study the next week.
Okay. Yeah. And then the second day, this was a pretty quick turnaround. It was Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m., and we came in, and initially, I think most of us were a little disappointed because we looked at the room, and it was maybe half the previous night. We still had the 17 of us, our 7 brethren from Ireland, the 8 of us from Edstone, and then the 2 visitors from the Netherlands. But then on top of that, how many did we end up with coming from out in the world?
Right. We had 13 people come, so we had a total of 30 people, as opposed to the 48 that we had the previous night.
Yeah, and still, though, you just heard a clip of the sermon Mr. Armstrong gave. I think it was, as I was discussing with Edwin earlier this morning, I think of the ones who came, he mentioned to me that there may have been some factors that discouraged some from coming. You said there was a bombing in Londonderry, a car bombing. It didn't kill anybody. But there were some people that were maybe discouraged from coming because of that.
That's right. On Saturday night, around the time that we were fellowshipping after the first lecture, we did actually have a car bombing in Londonderry, which is the other major city in Northern Ireland. So it wasn't in Belfast, but there were some people who did sign up to come, but they didn't end up coming, and that may have had something to do with that, because the police was discouraging some local folks there to kind of stay at home and such.
Yeah, but the 13 that came, several of them were repeats, and I think how many were brand that didn't come the night before? Was it 3 or 4?
Right, we actually had about six people who came to the Sunday event who had not been there on Saturday.
Okay, and then added to what we had Saturday night, how many in total then do we have for the follow-up Bible study?
Right, so we had 3 more people sign up, so we actually have a total of, we should have about 19 people there, but 12 of those will be people who are already members.
Not members. Okay, so 12, and as we've discussed, London it was 20 or 21, something like that?
That's right, we had 20 on the first follow-up Bible study and 18.
Okay.
And the second one.
So yeah, for London, which had probably 4 or 5 times as many people at the campaign, to have 20 come for the follow-up Bible study, if you just compare it in terms of the percentage, this really was even more effective or more successful in that sense. Assuming those 12, if 10 or 11 of them show up next Sunday, that'll be for the study in the same location. It'll be Brad McDonald who will fly over to Belfast on Sunday morning to meet with hopefully 12 people. So we'll see what comes from that. I won't get into too much detail with respect to a couple of them that just seem like they're becoming pretty committed to the PCG and what the PCG teaches. So that's very exciting. Well, maybe you could conclude then by telling us what we have, telling our audience what we have lined up here for the next couple of months in terms of PACs.
Yes, sir. We do have a couple of exciting events. First of all, on Sunday, February 24th, we are hoping to do an online appearance campaign on thetrumpet.com. So if people go there, then they can log into with a Trumpet account and then see yourself, Mr. Stephen Fleury, on the stream live on the website. So that'll be really exciting because that's accessible to everybody. But then we also have another personal appearance campaign in Glasgow, Scotland, lined up in mid-March. We're currently still looking for a venue, but that might be around March 16 and March 17. There were actually a few people who were at the Belfast back who showed interest to go there because it is actually fairly close.
Right. Yeah, I had two men that said that they'd like to fly over or maybe take the ferry, however they'd get there. But they told me before I left, too, that they wanted to see it again in Glasgow. So that's good news to report. We thank you for that, Edwin. And for you listeners, you don't want to miss what we'll play coming back from the break. We've got another 3-minute montage from the actual attendees at this this Belfast PAC. You'll get to hear from them next after the promo. We'll be right back.
Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to the Trumpet magazine. Is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Buenos dias. I found the station on CBS when I was changed channels, changed television stations, and I was fascinated, and I'm truly blessed by the work and the conviction of the man. It truly runs through, and it's inspiring. It really is. Truly is.
I thought the show was great tonight, really interesting. I live pretty close. I live about 10 miles away and got the opportunity to come. It's the first time I've ever been to anything like this, but I thought it was great. I'll be back tomorrow. It's really only in the last year I've started to get interested in the true word. So I'm learning as I go along, but Yeah, it was good and enjoyed it.
Especially about regarding Herbert W. Armstrong being the last Elijah, which I never realised or I never thought about that. So it makes sense to me anyway. So that's very enlightening.
My name is James Maxwell. I had the opportunity to meet Mr. Armstrong in 1967 at Belfast International Airport on his jet plane. He just did a campaign here in Belfast. And he was come up to the airport, and I was fortunate enough to get out onto the plane before it took off.
So at this airport, right here, you met Mr. Armstrong on his plane or before he took off?
No, on the plane itself. Met him on the plane, shook hands with him.
Yeah, this is my first back, yeah.
How old are you?
15.
This is the first church service in Belfast. You were there, this historic moment. PCG history.
Yeah, it's actually a very great night, and it's also my first time in Northern Ireland. And
oh, really? But yeah. You live in Ireland.
I live in Republic, yeah.
Okay. This is my first time.
I first seen the Trumpet magazine in 1993 when I was in the Army. But I didn't follow it on until 2006. I rang up the church in America and to find out if there was a church in Northern Ireland or Southern Ireland. But at the time, there wasn't. And now I'm back again.
I read your magazine. I've been reading it for years. I got in touch with the internet about 10 years ago, and that's when I came across the Trumpet, because you can't buy books like this in the shop, and it was just a brilliant win. It just opened your eyes to everything about the Bible prophecies and what you read about in the Bible years ago. You can actually see it happen.
Of all the magazines that The Trumpet magazine, to me, is the most informative of them all. You've got great writers, some of the best writers that I know of, and it's most informative.
So there's a sampling there of some of those who attended the Belfast PAX, some really good comments. The one from the 15-year-old just makes me think he's actually the son of one of our members, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, of the seven members we have, they all live in the Republic of Ireland. Four of them have never even been into Northern Ireland. Of course, Northern Ireland is in the UK. It's part of the UK. They're different countries, but they're all on this. They're both on this tiny island, and it was just kind of funny to me. Of course, there's a long history of division. Sharp division, and violent division for that matter, if you go back to the 70s and 80s. But it's been relatively peaceful for many years, although I think that could change, and there's some pretty good indication that it may change sooner rather than later. But still, on a small island, it was surprising to me to just hear from some of our own supporters, some of our own members who had never even crossed that border. You think about your typical American who will travel sometimes for days across the United States, or to grow up in Oklahoma, or to spend a lot of my youth in Oklahoma, and then to be able to say later on in life that I had never been to Dallas or Wichita, which just seems foreign to our thinking. But that said, let me just, I think an email that we got in over the weekend ties in with this. This was someone that heard us talking about one of our regular listeners who heard us talking about the PAC last week and on Friday's program in particular. And he responds to that saying, the program was excellent. I'm sure many of us will be praying for the new Edstone studio in detail as well. I was especially happy to see the call for prayer at the end of the program, and my favorite part was definitely hearing Mr. Gerald Fleury. That was the clip about just having more passion for God's work and God's empire. And he says here, prayer is something I have been working on for about a decade since I was called by God to understand His truth. I managed to stay on my knees for about 54 minutes on Sunday, which is a real special accomplishment. That's awesome that he's having a breakthrough with his prayer life. And of course, that's one of the keys to prayer, is really putting our heart in the work. And that's why these programs, and that's why the literature that God's church produces, that's why it's also valuable, because we really want to pour our hearts into this work. And that starts with our prayers. It says, in my mind, I could reason that Sunday is a nice day to ease up. However, I feel like a spiritual warrior refusing to sheath his sword, full of adrenaline, and one day to have eyes as flames of fire. It says, the night is far spent to not quit you like men, a reference there to 1 Samuel 4. It says, I'm starting to reap some of the fruits of fighting my way into a meaningful prayer life. There has been an abundance of sowing to get to the point of reaping. Thankfully, I'm reaping all good things because I'm almost overwhelmed by all the wonder of God's overflowing blessings and miracles, especially that of His indwelling Spirit. It says here, finally, if we have the fierce courage to take on a lion or a bear like David did, we must be growing closer to where God expects us to be. I can only imagine how fierce David was when he caught the lion and the bear. Those events, he says, really did happen. So here's an individual, a listener, trying to put his focus on others and what's happening to others. And really, even in going into the Belfast PAC, and you could say the same again about Tampa, in praying for people to respond, in praying for the follow-up rates. I know last week I also was praying for our faithful few members in Ireland as well, just seven of them, but praying for God to bless that region for their sake, because I know how much they're praying for growth and new people to come along, and I know how much they're praying for the work. There's just a few of them. I think all several of them at least are avid listeners to this program, and all of them there. And I think several are planning to go back next Sunday just to lend support to Mr. McDonald and the follow-up Bible study. That's what really stirs us up, we in the church. We're in the church. We're receiving all of this training, as chapter 6 of Mystery of the Ages says. And we get stirred up and we become more passionate when we think about expanding the empire, when we think about giving this truth, this precious truth and revelation to others, because we want them to have what we have. We want them to be blessed the way that we're blessed, just like this listener says. I'm beginning to see that praying earnestly, it's bringing blessings into my life. That's what we want, particularly for those who were supporters of Herbert Armstrong so many years ago. And maybe they've drifted away since then or fallen away from the truth, as it says in 2 Thessalonians 2, but they can come back. They can get back on track. They can get back on track if they get back into Mystery of the Ages. As I said yesterday at the PAC, Mystery of the Ages was the truth of God in 1985. And the thing of it is, it's the truth of God today. God's truth doesn't change. We grow in our understanding of that truth. But Mystery of the Ages is the truth. It's the truth today, just as it was in 1985. And anyone and everyone who will get back into it if you've drifted far from it, you'll bring the blessings of God back into your life. The blessings of understanding, wisdom. Well, it's exciting to see growth. Growth from within and growth from without. We need it. We need it from both. Brent Noctegal, our Jerusalem correspondent, he sent me this column by Melanie Phillips. He's the one that said, look, this is sounding like the United States and Britain in prophecy, some of these paragraphs. She speaks in this column of the crisis in Britain, the spectacle last week, Britain's parliament, making politics in Israel and America look positively sane, as she said it, and tranquil by comparison. And that's not saying much. They're all becoming spectacles. Well, she said the whole world was watching. The UK going into convulsions, as she says, trying to figure out how to leave the European Union. You've got half the country. It's pretty much evenly divided, just like America, just like Israel. Here in the UK, you've got the Brexiteers and you've got the Remainers. And then you've got a government caught in the middle, trying to please both sides, trying to draw up a deal that will make both sides happy. And it can't be done, as she brings out, Melanie Phillips. She says, but on the issue of sovereign British independence, there can be no compromise. The UK is either out of the EU or it's in. You can't have it in the middle. It says May's deal would have left the UK under the thumb of the EU, over which, as a non-EU member, it would no longer have any influence at all. It was Brexit in name only, or remain by stealth. Melanie says, the lesson here for the wider world is that negotiating with the non-negotiable always leads to surrender. You can't negotiate with the non-negotiable. My father makes a similar point in Jerusalem in Prophecy. Look at over the weekend, you had President Trump trying to compromise or negotiate with Speaker Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, who won't negotiate. They won't even see him. They won't even talk to him. And so the president ends up surrendering ground, basically. And then Pelosi and Schumer just reject it flat out. It doesn't work. That's the wider lesson in this, negotiating with the non-negotiable. But then listen to this. This is the part where, it sounds like the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. She says, Britain is a very special country, which is why it's the one country to leave the EU. The countries of mainland Europe, with all their long histories of mutual invasion, permeable borders, shifting national boundaries, and attachments to democracy that are fitful and tenuous, have a shallow understanding of national identity. But then with Britain, it's different. It's a very different history. This history, she says, has created its national character, independent of mind, stoic under pressure, opposed to extremism, but ferocious in defense of its liberties and very, very averse to being bullied or told what to do. Of course, the only thing that she's leaving out is the blessings from God in the past two centuries plus. She says Britain's been the cradle of political liberty. This is where it all started. Liberty and freedom. This is why it voted to leave the EU, because despite the cultural demoralization of its post-war elites, which took it into the European project in 1973, and what did Mr. Armstrong say about that day? A day fraught with ominous potentialities. Even with all of this sickness from within, Britain still knows itself to be special, Melanie Phillips says. And then listen to this, this paragraph. There are three nations which have this view of themselves as being uniquely blessed: Britain, America, and Israel. All have played an outsized role in bringing the benefits of civilization to the world. These three nations, of course, two of them are the birthright nations, but you put Judah in there with them. These three, what a special relationship and the unique blessings. Winston Churchill, back in the 1946 Iron Curtain speech, he's the one that described this alliance between the U.S. and Britain as a special relationship. And then President Kennedy, back in 1962, he told the Israeli Prime Minister at the time, Golda Meir, that the United States has a special relationship with Israel in the Middle East. And he said, really, you can't compare it to any other relationship except the relationship the U.S. has with Britain. These three nations, Britain, the United States, and the Israeli state, look at the relationship, look at the intimacy, look at the historical ties over the past two centuries. Look at their attachment to the Old Testament. The so-called Judeo-Christian ethic, the Judeo-Christian foundation. Well, look into the United States and Britain in prophecy, and you'll see why there's this closeness between these three, or at least there was historically. You look at some of the prophecies, of course, for these latter days, and God says he'll break the brotherhood between Judah and Israel. God says through the prophet Isaiah, Manasseh shall devour Ephraim, and Ephraim Manasseh, and together they're going to be against Judah. Fighting, bickering, division between these brother nations. These three nations that have been uniquely blessed, as Melanie Phillips says. And of course, ultimately, it says in Hosea 5 and verse 5 that all three together are going to fall in the space of 1 hour. It's going to happen suddenly. All three of them collapsing together. Melanie Phillips, in her article, she talked about these three nations that have been uniquely blessed. She says, yes, all have had their faults, The British Empire had episodes of great cruelty. America had vicious racial prejudice. Israel's political system is corrupt and dysfunctional. All three countries, however, are beset from within by an intelligentsia determined to distort their nation's history, exaggerate its failings, and prove it was born in original sin. All of them, all three, they're being attacked from within. Another prophecy, Isaiah 1, it speaks of our sinful nations, just laden with iniquity. God says through the prophet Isaiah that there's a sickness from head to toe. The whole head is sick. That sickness starts from within, the attack from within, and then the attack from without. An intelligentsia determined to distort our nation's history, exaggerate our failings, and prove it was born in original sin. Look at the spectacle. We talked about the spectacle in the UK in the middle of last week. Look at the spectacle in the United States on Friday. BuzzFeed comes out with this story saying that law enforcement agents, they've got the emails and the text messages that prove President Trump told Michael Cohen to lie before Congress. That's suborning perjury. And so he should be impeached. BuzzFeed is the one that sets off this firestorm of impeachment talks. Yet another round. It's not the first time this has happened. It certainly won't be the last time. Grabian put together a montage of all of the media outlets calling for President Trump's impeachment. And this is BuzzFeed, the infamous organization that produced the Steele dossier 2 years ago. That's the source here. And then the reporters themselves, never mind their sketchy background, never mind their dishonesty, never mind the lies that they've reported before. Here they come out with their latest report Thursday night, late Thursday night, on into Friday, and then the wheels get turning, and everyone's calling for impeachment. You listen in this montage to how many times they say, if this is true, what it could mean. If this is true, we're not sure it's true, but if it's true, that could be impeachment for the President of the United States. Here's clip three.
If this BuzzFeed News report is true, then we are likely on our way to possible impeachment proceedings.
If it were to be true, it means the president told someone to lie under oath, which very simply is a crime and is impeachable.
If this story is true, we must begin impeachment proceedings.
If you can prove that the president ordered it, that to certainly rises to the level of impeachable offense.
We're going to know if the president of the United States committed a federal felony. And at that point, we are in high crimes and misdemeanor, and we are in impeachment territory.
Right. Is that an impeachable offense?
This is suborning perjury. I think there's no question it's an impeachable offense.
That is considered an impeachable offense.
Absolutely. These are impeachable offenses.
Inside that answer, I did hear the I word impeachable.
Impeachment is a very fine alternative way to deal with this.
Democrats will move maybe faster, maybe more aggressively toward impeachment.
There are an awful lot of similarities between a couple of the articles of impeachment against Nixon and the elements of this story.
The very same offense for which the House of Representatives moved to impeach Richard Nixon.
In the past, been impeachable.
Yeah, that is the exact way that Nixon was kicked out of office.
It's one of the things that drove Richard Nixon out of office.
CNN has not corroborated this reporting.
CNN, we should be clear, has not independently confirmed this.
CNN has not independently confirmed this reporting.
It is important for us to note this morning that neither CNN nor any other major news outlet has so far confirmed BuzzFeed's reporting.
Shouldn't you independently confirm it before you scream impeachment? All day long, Friday. It's an attack, as my father keeps saying. They're relentlessly waging war against the president, and it's leading the United States to its own destruction. Sickness from head to toe. Well, he's talked before, too, about the election of Donald Trump and how that it's led to a temporary resurgence. But boy, the attacks. The attacks continue. It went on all day long. And then, as many of you probably know, the special counsel, Robert Mueller, they release a statement saying that support this BuzzFeed report. There's no truth to it. This is what it says at Fox News. Special counsel Robert Mueller's office on Friday issued an extraordinary statement disputing bombshell news report that claimed President Trump directed Michael Cohen to lie about the timing of discussions over a proposed Trump Tower project in Moscow. It says the statement is remarkable in that Mueller's team rarely issues statements in response to news stories. But BuzzFeed's story sparked immense interest from Democrats who called for renewed investigations and even suggested the allegations could be the basis for impeachment proceedings. So even Bob Mueller and his band of angry Democrats that have it in for the president, they had to admit that the story was bogus, that the story was a smear campaign. Yet another in a long line of so many. I wondered why. Why would Mueller come out and say that there's no truth to it? Why not just let the... They've been leaking. Well, maybe not as much the special counsel, but there's been leak after leak after leak from the DOJ, from the FBI. It happened all through the campaign in 2016. It's happened ever since. Some of the worst of them, though, They have been either fired or discredited, and maybe some still will be prosecuted. But over the course of the busy weekend, I managed to listen to the first part of Mark Levin's radio show from Friday. He has a podcast that he posts later on his website, so you can listen to them after the fact. But he says here, he's commenting, I guess, I just tried to put together the timeline. Here the media... They're just hyperventilating all day Friday, so excited that this might bring down the president. And then this is Mark Levin commenting at the end of the day after watching all of this craziness. Here's what he said on his program Friday night. This is clip four.
If in fact either of these so-called reporters for BuzzFeed saw documents, one claims he did, and had other information read to him, now where would those documents be, ladies and gentlemen? They would be with Mr. Mueller and his people, in Mueller's office. Why am I the only one in the whole country to bring this up? Now, if you are a U.S. attorney, and you or your people are leaking investigative information to the media, as the FBI has now found out, this is a crime. Right, Mr. McCabe? Right, Mr. Baker? Right, Mr. Stroke? Right, Ms. Page? Now, I'm calling on the acting Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Whitaker, and the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Rosenstein, to start a leak investigation in Mr. Mueller's office.
A leak investigation into the Mueller office. Counsel. Now, this is Mark Levin used to work at the DOJ, so you had all, even the conservative commentators that were just talking about the leaks and how that this obviously, because there's text messages and emails supposedly, how that the leaks then obviously came from the special counsel. And to this point, of course, the special counsel and Robert Mueller, they've sort of, well, they're above the fray. People like to say they're the ones that are investigating the president. So they're quietly going about their business. But they've been leaking along the way too. But here's a case where there's just a small team. It's not tens of thousands in the DOJ and the FBI. And well, we can't know where these leaks are coming from. But here's a case where it obviously came from this small group 17 investigators on this team, and they're leaking. According to BuzzFeed, they're leaking that the president said this or that the president didn't do this. And if that's the case, then, well, then there should be an investigation into the leakers, Mark Levin said. My father in that Saving America article, if you remember, this is what I was thinking about as I listened to those first few minutes of his show. This quote from Saving America from the radical left temporarily. My father said, Donald Trump has proved himself willing to take a stand where others have not. It's quite something to behold, him resisting these anti-American forces. He has inspired a few other leaders to challenge the radical left and help expose it for what it is. And that's what Mark Levin did Friday night. He challenged them. He said, look, there is one standard. There's one law and applies to all of us. What about the investigation into the investigators? Here's a bit more from his show Friday, clip 5.
I am saying that Mr. Whitaker and Mr. Rosenstein and the director of the FBI must now trigger a leak investigation, find who the criminals are in Mr. Mueller's office, if it's not Mr. Mueller himself. Who had access to this information, if it exists, but it must, right? And prosecute them.
He's calling for a prosecution. He's calling for an investigation. How did BuzzFeed get these tips? How did they get these emails? How did they get these text messages? One final bit from Friday's show, clip 6.
Somebody in Mr. Mueller's office leaked. Because now CNN says, hey, they have texts, they have emails, they may have this, they may have that. Well, who would know? Who is they? Who are they? Mueller's office. Wow. So Mueller's office is leaking. You have to be Helen Keller not to see this over there at the FBI and the Department of Justice. Pay attention to what I'm telling you. Over at the Justice Department and the FBI. What's wrong with those people over there?
And of course, those departments now, they're headed up by not Obama holdovers, but they're headed up by people appointed by Trump. Mr. Whitaker. Well, Rosenstein's been there, but he's under Whitaker. And then you got Christopher Wray at the FBI. And Mark Levin saying, look, are you listening? Are you watching? Did you read the BuzzFeed report? Can you see that that's coming from some of those 17 investigators? And when are you going to investigate them? Did you know that an hour after he made those comments Friday, Bob Mueller took the extraordinary step of denouncing the BuzzFeed report? He let the whole thing just run like a tornado all day Friday. And then finally, someone that has quite a lot of clout, millions and millions of listeners, finally someone stands up to him. Finally someone pushes back. And within an hour, you have the Mueller team saying, we can't stand by that report. The leaks didn't come from us. They're not accurate. That's the only language. That's the only language that radical leftist intelligentsia, as Melanie Phillips puts it, that's the only language that they understand. Remember the point again that my father makes about pushing back and how that there's so few that will even do that. Donald Trump has proven himself to be willing to take a stand where others have not, my father wrote. It's quite something to behold him resisting these anti-American forces. He has inspired a few other leaders to challenge the radical left and to help expose it for what it is. That's what you heard if you happened to listen to Mark Levin's show Friday night. You heard someone challenging and exposing. And then the Mueller campaign gets nervous and they have to come and save face. And they did it right away. They didn't do it earlier in the day when the media was hysterical. when the media was embarrassing them, they were embarrassing themselves. He didn't come out and correct the record right away. He didn't see the BuzzFeed report and then 2 minutes later say, there's no truth to that. We didn't leak this. He only did it. He only did it when someone pushed back, when someone challenged him, when someone exposed him and all of his nefarious activities. You go back to this program on Friday, and that quote or that clip from my father about having the passion that we need for God's truth. And then the fact, too, as I said on Friday's show, the fact that we're here to overcome and to conquer our adversary, to strive against the devil, to fight in this good fight. We can't compromise or negotiate with those who won't negotiate. We can't compromise or negotiate with our adversary, the devil. There's an important lesson in that, what we saw on Friday, or what I saw in reading about it over the weekend. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send us some emails. Send us your thoughts about the PAC or about some of these programs or about the impact they have on your prayer life. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.